Today on the Hockey News pregame show, the Boston Bruins still a Stanley Cup contender? Dallas Stars, are they a sleeper? Plus, we have Seattle Kraken team site editor Glenn Dreyfus to talk about the Kraken. Plus, Ken Campbell, the icon, is filling in. Stay with us. Brought to you by BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. It's the Hockey News pregame show. Yes, it's the Hockey News pregame show. I am Ryan Kennedy, joined today by Ken Campbell. Michael Tracos is on vacation. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Perfect.
The band is almost back together, too.
That's right. That's right. It's an old-school
feel to this.
Exactly. And let's start off with somebody that, at this point, we can almost call old-school, Marc-Andre Fleury. Goaltender for the Minnesota Wild, played his 1,000th game the other night, and he won it at that against his old mates from Pittsburgh. Lovely ceremony for him, a lot of good pomp and circumstance. But let's get down to the nitty-gritty here. It felt at one point early in the season that Fleury might have been kind of done. Now, it feels like he's legit back. So Minnesota, probably not a contender this year. Do you think Marc-Andre Fleury could help out a playoff team at the deadline?
Well, he's having a moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he really is. And, I mean, you're right. Earlier this year, and there's been several times over the past couple of years where it's kind of like, okay, he's done.
Right.
And he got to 1,000. Like, he got to 1,000. Fourth goalie all time. I feel like it might never happen again. I mean, like, Jonathan Quick is next on the list at 700 and something.
Wow.
You know, so, like, now the way goalies are deployed and everything, I wonder if it's ever going to happen again. But that's neither here nor there. But, I mean, yeah, I kind of feel like it's going to be his call, right?
Totally.
And, I mean, Colorado's just, like, screaming, right? It's just, like, screaming Colorado.
Right.
Or maybe Toronto or Carolina, maybe one of those teams. But, like, to me, it just seems like the fit is Colorado, and I mean, because I just don't trust their goaltending. I don't.
Yeah.
I just don't. I mean, we talk about how Fleury has 553 wins, and I guess wins, goaltending wins, really aren't that big a deal anymore, as they shouldn't be probably, I guess, because Georgiev's right up there, right?
Right.
I think he's at the top of the league.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been very good. So I could see, like, maybe as an insurance policy, you know, kind of thing, that you know, maybe Colorado goes into the playoffs with that. And, I mean, I guess it is an insurance policy. Yeah. I mean, because you never really know with, like, any goalie almost. But, I mean, Colorado can sit there and say, we won the Cup 2 years ago with Darcy Kemper.
Yeah,
right?
And Kemper went out for a while, and Pavel Francouz took over.
Right,
and
right.
was good enough. He gave them what they needed.
Yeah.
And even when Kemper was back, he was basically playing with one good eye.
Yeah,
and still managed to win a series featuring Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Well, yeah, I remember the last, after the final game, they were talking to Kemper, and Kemper said, yeah, that was a really nice third period to watch, because basically Colorado didn't let Tampa touch the puck.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So I feel like that would be a fit.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
And a good guy in the room as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
like,
he's not going to disrupt.
He's not going to disrupt anything you have.
Yeah.
He's not going to, you know. So do you, you know.
Do you say why not?
Do you say, like, at this point, do you say we'll give you Bowen Byram? I don't know.
Ooh.
I don't know. Like, maybe
that would be steep.
That would be steep. But he's not, like, he's kind of had his struggles too, right? I don't know.
I would go picks just because I'm more conservative.
So, second and a fourth or something like that.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, one team that does not need goaltending is the Boston Bruins.
Right.
Jeremy Swayman obviously doing the heavy lifting right now, but Linus Ullmark, he won the Vezina last year. But I want to talk about the Bruins because coming into the season, we're like, all right, no Bergeron, no Krejci.
Yeah.
They're going to suffer down the middle. Matthew Patra comes in as a rookie and gives them solid minutes. Charlie Coyle has been a revelation.
That's the guy. That's the guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy who's making a lot of this happen.
Yeah. Because how are they still the best team in the NHL? They played They were tied with Vancouver, or I guess they were behind Vancouver. They played head-to-head. Boston blanked the Canucks 4-0.
Yeah.
So legit, you're saying, you have to say at this point, the Bruins are the best team in the NHL. How are they? Because Poitras out now, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is just a team. I always go back. It must be the culture, the goaltending. I mean, what is it?
Well, I think that one word that you just used, culture. I mean, I think that's an overused word in hockey sometimes. Mm. Like, they're always saying, well, we're trying to establish a culture here. But in Boston, there really is a culture.
Yeah.
And I think that there are people in that room, like David Pastrnak, like Brad Marchand, like Charlie McAvoy, who will say, this isn't good enough, we have to be better, or, you know, whatever. But they are the ones who set the tone for that culture.
Yeah, keep it going,
and
boys.
The thing is, you know, it's all well and good to have those guys. Like, you know, you talk about guys that are good in the room, mm-hmm. and they're good leaders and everything. But lots of times, by that time in their career, they can't do it on the ice.
Right.
Like, say a David Backes or, you know, whatever. Guys like that, by the time they get to the end of the career, they can't really do it.
Right.
But, like, Marchand's being Marchand.
Yeah.
Without the stupid stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Charlie McAvoy.
Incredible.
He's been terrific.
Yeah.
You know, Pastrnak's back to being what he has always been.
Maybe
you
even know? A sleeper heart candidate.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah. And so to me, like, I think that culture thing really has some traction, some credence, because they have established that there. The guys that came before them, you know, the Charas, the Bergerons, the Krejcis, everybody else, they established that culture, and I think these guys are carrying it on. And I think, as I also said, I think Charlie Coyle's been a huge part of this. I mean,
indeed.
I always thought he was good. Like, I always thought he was a really good player.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was this versatile, this good, this much of a Swiss Army knife. Like, he's been very, very good.
Yeah, definitely. It always felt like Coyle was sort of like, oh, he'd be like the perfect third line center that could be your second line center if necessary, but he has definitely stepped up. And I want to talk about another team that's doing really well right now, the Dallas Stars. They have quietly taken over the Central Division. And, of course, a Central Division featuring the Colorado Avalanche, as we were talking before, and the Winnipeg Jets, who we talked about on this show before, because they've been doing really well this year. But to me, the Stars are a sleeper to go all the way. Like, when I look at this Dallas roster, they have a goaltender in Jake Oettinger. They have incredible defense led by Miro Heiskanen. They have great depth up front.
Yeah.
Right? They have veterans. They have younger guys. You know, whether it's from Pavelski and Ben to Jason Robertson and Wyatt Johnston, like, they have it all in my mind. They have good coaching as well. Are we not talking about Dallas enough?
Probably not. Yeah. Probably not. I mean, I think they kind of got lost in the shuffle with, you know, the great start that Winnipeg had.
Mm.
And now Winnipeg's kind of come back to earth a little bit. They've lost 5 in a row, I think. And you know, Dallas just sort of keeps chugging along. They sort of seem to me like the team that just, like, we're playing Dallas.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, man, like, really? We got to play them again tonight?
Yeah.
Like, they suck to play against.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally.
And so, you know, I mean, and again, there's a culture there, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a culture there. I mean, and you know, they've got, you know, Jamie Benn is having a bit of a moment himself, too. Like, he's another guy that we thought was kind of done. And now he's potting the odd goal here and there. He's been very good for them. You know, Roope Hintz is a guy, like, if you want to talk about people and teams you don't talk about, if we don't talk about the Dallas Stars, people don't talk about Roope Hintz enough.
Very true.
People do not talk about Roope Hintz enough. He has been ridiculously good this year.
Yeah.
And he's always been that way. Like, a couple of years in the playoffs, like, he was basically being put together before every game with, like, duct tape and lace and stuff, and he was going out and being really good.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, when you have a fourth line of Faxa, Dellandrea, and I can't remember who the right winger is on that line, but, like, when you've got that kind of depth throughout your lineup, and then you know, another guy, Thomas Harley, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Living up to his promise.
Thomas Harley and Noah Dobson have been, like, two of the biggest offensive revelations in the league this year.
Yeah,
very from true. The back end.
From the back end, yeah, of course. Definitely. And then Matt Duchesne, of course, coming in and having a lot of success with them, too. So that was a nice little pickup for Dallas.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you know, and he's not even playing first line minutes right now. They've got Hintz playing on the top. And then they've got Duchesne on the second line. Mm-hmm. So that moves everybody down. So Fax is now not a third liner. He's where he probably belongs on the fourth line.
There you go.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay Lightning, they have been high for so long. Now they've been hit a little low. Some bad news coming out this week. Mikhail Sergachev will miss significant time due to a leg injury. So I put this question to you. Can Tampa still make the playoffs, or has time, which is undefeated, as we know, and depth finally catch up to them?
Well, I think they can make the playoffs only because they're in the East. Mm. And I guess Pittsburgh could put a run together. The Islanders seem to be playing a little bit better under Patrick Waugh. Mm. Maybe they slip into that spot. And then there's Detroit. So you're looking at Tampa, Detroit, Pittsburgh, and the Islanders for those last two spots.
I think that's fair.
So I think they could. Mm-hmm. I think they could. I don't. They don't scare me at all.
It's not
like
the,
at
yeah.
all. At all.
If you're Boston and you're like you this have is to the face year, them, you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no. This is the year where it's like, yeah, we're okay. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, do you count out that group?
That's the thing, right? It's like they're coached by John Cooper. Yeah. They have Victor Hedman. They have Braden Point. They have Steven Stamkos.
I still think you do, though. I still think you count them out. Like, I don't see them, if they make the playoffs, being a team that's going to put on some
like a
massive run to the final or something like that. I don't see it. It just, they're way too inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
They can't win on the road.
Yeah.
Like, they're terrible on the road. And, like, you know, I mean, Andrei Vasilevsky used to be one of the most intimidating goalies in the history of the game.
Yeah.
I don't think he is anymore.
.899 save percentage.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, to be fair, didn't have a training camp. Obviously missed time at the beginning of the year. And it was kind of funny that I remember on the show at the beginning of the season, we were like, wow, Tampa Bay's doing this without Andrei Vasilevsky.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it just felt like, again, you know, I mean, Sergachev, obviously one of their most important defensemen, and, you know, he's already missed time, and now he's going to miss more. I mean, that's a huge blow for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, to their credit, you know, finding guys like Emil Lilleberg and getting minutes out of a Calvin DeHaan, Radish. I mean, full points to Tampa Bay as an organization.
Yep.
But at some point, it just feels like, you know, like Nick Paul is minus 21.
Yeah.
Steven Stamkos is minus 20. Like, these are not characteristics of the Tampa Bay teams we're used to.
Yeah, and I bet you it's driving John Cooper out of his mind.
Right.
No, seriously, I'm sure it's driving him out of his mind because they're big on setting a standard there, and everything is either below standard or above standard, and there's been way too many games this year, way too many that have been, like, below, like, not just below standard, but way below standard.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing I can say about them is they don't scare me. They
yeah.
just don't scare me at all.
Yeah, they've been terrifying for years.
Yeah, I would not, so if I'm going to the playoffs, I would not be intimidated by a Tampa Bay Lightning matchup.
I wonder, too, like that first round series against the Leafs last year where it kind of felt like Toronto figured out Vasilevsky. I wonder if that was kind of that moment where the rest of the league was like, oh, okay, he's not bulletproof.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, and he hasn't been this year. I mean, he started the season hurt, and he is coming back from an injury. So, I mean, you've got to take that into account. And he's probably a guy that, you know, I mean, I bet you if you ask players, I don't think players know as much about other players as people think, but like, if you ask players, you know, if you could have one guy
right.
for the game of your life or whatever.
Yeah.
I bet you a lot of guys would choose Vasilevsky. So,
yeah.
I mean, he's the kind of guy, we've seen him do it a million times,
sure.
right? Like he, you know, when they need to win, he like shuts the door completely, right? And so I suppose he has the capacity to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't seen it yet this year. Waiting for it still.
Yeah.
You know, and if he does start playing that way, then yeah, but I don't know. It just doesn't.
Not right now.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting summer in Tampa Bay because if you're Julian Breezeball, you do kind of have to think long term now. Like, are you becoming the next Pittsburgh or Washington.
You are. You absolutely are. You absolutely are. Because everybody does that.
Yeah.
When you build the way those teams build, you become that. Yeah. And then it drops off and it falls off. Mm-hmm. So, like, I had a big hot take earlier this year that, you know, Steven Stamkos at the deadline. I mean, Julian Brisebois has put, you know, put that fire out
right
emphatically.
Yes.
But if they are out of it.
Yeah. Philosophically.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that he's going to sign back there. I'm not sure that, I think it spoke volumes that they didn't even talk to him last summer about an extension.
Right.
And he came into camp and he was clearly a little bit miffed about that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that speaks volumes of what this organization thinks of him long term. Mm. I would not be the least bit surprised if he doesn't sign with Tampa after this year.
It's wild thinking about Stamkos not in a Tampa Bay jersey.
Yeah, that's one of those ones that would look weird.
But I mean, great for Puck Doku in a couple of years when we you know, have to have Tampa and, you know, whoever.
Right.
Another player that could be changing uniforms and probably will be is Chris Tanev of the Calgary Flames. Highly coveted by many a team for obvious reasons. He's a fantastic player. But what I had heard is Ottawa, the center, is still interested in Chris Tanev. And my understanding is that they know they're not a playoff team this year or
really?
A contender. Yeah. But what they would like in this scenario, they would like to see Tanev come in this year, get the lay of the land, you know, get everybody figured out, and then, you know, they re-sign him. And next year is the year where Ottawa goes for that playoff spot. The one we thought they'd be going for this year,
and
to be honest.
Before, like the summer of Pierre.
The summer
of Pierre Dorion,
So I'll put it to you a different way, because we know Ottawa wants Chris Tanev. Should Chris Tanev want Ottawa? Do we see enough long-term potential in the Sens for this to make sense for a guy that's already in his 30s, who I would assume wants a cup?
I would say an emphatic, big, fat no. Like, why, if you can dictate your own destination and you can go to a contender, why would you not go there instead of Ottawa? Like, Ottawa's been doing this already. They've
ask Claude Giroux.
Yeah, and Jacob Chychrun. Like, so they're going out and getting these guys, but then they're still in second last place all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, they're obviously, people are overvaluing their young players or, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Ottawa's done this. Like, why does Ottawa go and do this even? I don't even know why Ottawa would want to go and do this.
Well, I think they obviously believe in their core. But at the same time, like, you look at goaltending and they thought Korpisalo could maybe be the answer.
Yeah,
he has not been.
That hasn't worked out.
It has not worked
like,
out.
Like, at all. It's been like what we would say, a disaster.
Yes. In terms of goals saved above expected, Korpisalo is one of the worst in the league right now.
I don't expect him to stop anything.
There you go.
Like, I never expect him to stop anything.
That's a new stat. There you go. Well played. It's funny, though, because, I mean, the Sens are so vexing where you look at those young players, and granted, they thought they'd have Shane Pinto for the first half, and that didn't happen. But Tkachuk, Stützle, you know, like, having Jake Sanderson on the back end and, you know, having some veterans mixed in, it felt like, okay, it could be them in Buffalo or, you know, Detroit and them, or Detroit and Buffalo. You know, Detroit was the team that actually stepped up.
Right.
And to be honest, I thought it was going to be Ottawa or Buffalo ahead of Detroit, but then DeBrincat turned an amazing move there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just feels like it's just not there yet for Ottawa, is it?
Well, it's not there yet. Like, and... like, don't you, at the end of this year, don't you look at your roster and your organization and say, okay, who's going to do it for us? Like, who's in and who's out? Like, and start thinking about that, because I don't know. Like, to me, it's just like these young guys, what are they learning right now?
Right.
They're learning how to lose.
Yeah.
They're learning how to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it's just like, maybe we weren't quite as good as we thought we were going to be. Maybe we have to rethink this, and maybe we have to move some of these young guys. I don't know, but like, to me, it's just, it hasn't worked in Ottawa.
It's very true. Hasn't worked yet. All right, well, right now, we are joined by a special guest. We have Glenn Dreyfus, our Seattle Kraken team site editor. Glenn, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Glad to be the one wearing the goalie pads today.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Let's talk about the Kraken. Obviously, last year ended on a pretty high note, their first ever playoff berth, and they beat the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. This year, bit more of a struggle, not sure if they're going to make the playoffs. And again, we've been talking some deadline today. You know, we've got a couple of weeks to go, but what does GM Ron Francis do? Should Seattle, in your mind, be sellers at the deadline?
Well, a writer who I very much admire said that the Kraken should be sellers at the trade deadline. Oh, wait, that was you.
All right.
Yeah, that's a more reasonable expectation than that they should be buyers. Now, Ron Francis is loyal to his current team. And in fact, when he brought on Thomas Tatar, he said one of the reasons he did that was to show his team that he still believed in them. Right now, there's six teams within 5 points of the final wild card playoff spot. The Kraken are one of those in the Western Conference. So as long as they're within sniffing distance, they probably, unless they get bowled over by an offer for Jared McKay or Jordan Eberle or Alex Wenberg, which is unlikely, they will probably stick with the lineup that they have. The only thing that the success of the Kraken last year did, the only on-ice drawback, is that it may have unreasonably raised expectations.
Well, speaking of raising expectations, there was a guy in that lineup that raised expectations sky high last year in Matty Beniers, obviously, who won the Calder Trophy and deserved it. Was great as a rookie. You know, I don't think it's really like it's not on. We've seen this before.
Sophomore slump.
We've seen this before. It's happened before. But my question to you, Glenn, is like he's getting lots of minutes. He's been playing, you know, a lot. He's been playing 19, 20, 16 minutes a game, you know, has moved down to the fourth line a little bit lately. But what is going on with Matty Beniers? What is, you know, he's not putting up, obviously not putting up the numbers that he put up. He's not the two-way force that he seemed to be last year. Well, what's happening with him? And, you know, when can we see him maybe turn things around a little bit?
Matty Beniers' two-way game is still strong as far as the defensive end of the ice. As far as the offense goes, when you win the Calder Trophy, you put a bullseye on your back. And the big, strong men of the National Hockey League have been targeting Matty Beniers in some legal ways and sometimes in some illegal ways, like Cole Sillinger of the Columbus Blue Jackets boarding Beniers head first. So that's something new for Matty Beniers to deal with. He's finding out that when you succeed, you're going to be a target of the opposition. He has 6 goals, 19 points to this point in the season. And if there's one thing he probably needs to work on in the offseason, it's getting stronger because the opposition attention isn't going to stop. Now, one thing the coaching staff has done recently is moved him on a line with Brandon Tanev and Ty Karche as more or less his bodyguards so that he doesn't get beaten up so bad. It hasn't shown results in terms of scoring immediately, but I can tell you that the Kraken aren't worried about Matty Beniers long term. Short term, it sure would be nice if he'd go on a hot streak.
Fair enough. One player who has been rather hot for the Kraken all season is goaltender Joey Decord. And pretty interesting because obviously when this franchise began, Philip Grubauer was the big name in net, but Glenn, you've seen some great things from Joey Decord.
Joey Decord is not only the real deal, he's the full meal deal. He's fourth in goals against in the league among goalies, fifth in save percentage. He's death to breakaways. As you saw in the Winter Classic, he doesn't shy away from the big stage. And the reason he's a fan favorite isn't just his outstanding play, and he's played 20 of the last 22 games in net for the Kraken. But it's how he does it. He's electric. He's as good a stick handler as some of the skaters are. He takes one-timers in practice using his goalie stick. In a game, we saw him during a Kraken penalty kill actually backhand a puck down the ice with the goalie stick, which is real tough. He's also acrobatic, and he's probably the biggest rock star in Seattle hockey right now.
Yeah. Wow. What is it about goalies? They all think they're great out. Like, I don't even know why they play goal.
Right.
Like, Jordan Binnington thinks he's a superstar out.
Yeah.
So anyways, but wanted to ask you about another young player, Shane Wright. I mean, you know, he's been down in Coachella Valley for this year. I think that was a good move. I think that's been a positive move. I think that's they've handled him very, very well, regardless of what other people may have thought. But I'm wondering, you know, I mean, they're very cognizant. I know Seattle's very cognizant of keeping Coachella Valley competitive, and they are competitive again this year. Went to the final last year, obviously.
Yep.
Came one game within winning the whole thing in their first year.
Yeah.
So they're very, I know they're very cognizant of keeping that team competitive, but I'm wondering, you know, is there a chance we see Shane Wright up before the end of the year, particularly if maybe the Kraken do drop out of it? Because I know you talked about how close they are and that, but like, to me, it's not even the points. It's the number of teams you got to get past.
Right, right.
Especially in like all these three-point games and everything. Like, it's almost impossible to gain traction. So I'm just wondering if we see them out, you know, do they maybe bring Shane up for a little while and give him another taste of the NHL? And if, as a further question, I'm wondering, is Dave Haxtell in any trouble here if the Kraken don't make the playoffs?
To answer first your Shane Wright question, we've already had a stack a mile high of what's wrong with Shane Wright? Is Shane Wright a bust? The man can't even walk into a bar and legally order a beer yet because he's not old enough, and a lot of people are writing him off. If there is one thing the Kraken have shown that is unusual in sports, let alone hockey, it's patience. Shane Wright didn't come out of the box like a Connor McDavid or a Connor Bedard because his name wasn't Connor. And everybody who's not a generational player, it takes some time, again, to move from the junior ranks, from captaining the World Junior Championship for Canada a year ago to the AHL, honing his skills, refining it, like Beniers getting stronger. I still think Shane Wright has a bright and long future in the NHL. Will it come at the end of this season? Partly depends on whether other players are moved at the deadline. And if the Kraken are out of it, sure. With the way Shane Wright has been playing, and he's been scoring at a prodigious pace in the AHL, as Coachella Valley has surged to the top of the Western Division standings in the AHL, he's playing very well. He does deserve a shot. Either at the end of the season or next year, he'll be there, and he'll do just fine. As far as Haxtell goes, I think the key thing is that even during the 8-game losing streak, he never lost the room. The players never stopped believing in him. They're just as he believes in them, and his calm, even-keeled demeanor was part of the reason the Kraken were able to follow up an 8-game losing streak with a 9-game winning streak. Now, he got a contract extension this past season, so it's unlikely that the Kraken, who I said are more patient than most pro franchises, would jettison him. Do you realize, and this is a good thing to close on, that Dave Haxtell is the longest serving coach in the Pacific Division? kind of a sad commentary on NHL coaching longevity, but Dave Haxtell is already the dean of Pacific Division coaches.
Right on. Well, thanks so much for that, Glenn. And after the break, we've got more of the Hockey News pregame show, so stick with us. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show. And as the trade deadline approaches, we're going to play a little game here. Can I call it Should He Stay or Should He Go in honor of the clash?
We will clash.
We will clash on this, maybe. All right. Let's go through some big names in the rumor mill.
Right.
And you tell me if they should stay or should they go.
Right.
And you can go either way here, if it's the player or should the team
go.
Going to start off with Trevor Zegras. Now, teams want Trevor Zegras. I don't know if Anaheim wants to get rid of Trevor Zegras. He's having an off year. He's been banged up.
Yeah.
But he is still Trevor Zegras. So should Anaheim dangle Zegras or should they be happy with the, with what they have?
Well, should he stay or should he go? Well, he can't go anywhere until he comes back. He's not back probably due till maybe the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
But he should go.
Yeah.
I'm when I look at Trevor Zegras, all that ever keeps going through my mind is lots of sizzle, not enough steak.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I don't know, maybe the analytics crowd will crucify me for this, but I just don't, you know, I mean, okay, you score a Michigan goal every 6 months. Yay, great.
Yeah.
What are you doing? What are you doing to get better? What are you doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't see him. Like, you want a young guy to be progressively learning, to progressively, and it just doesn't seem like that's happening with Trevor Zegras. I wouldn't be, I mean, you know, if you're Pat Verbeek, then, you know, you run, the risk you run, of course, is you trade Trevor Zegras and he becomes a
100-point
guy somewhere else.
Right, right.
But I just, I don't know, I'm starting to think that there's just not enough there.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, Greg Cronin, obviously a coach that demands a standard, and it feels like he's, you know, Zegras has been open to things, but it's been a really tough year for him.
Yeah.
Even when he is healthy, he hasn't been scoring. But I think I might agree with you, and I almost feel like if Verbeek can make this deal now, then he can still trade off the fact that it's like Trevor Zegras.
Especially if you like, if you get another Cutter Gauthier kind of thing going.
Well, that's the
thing. Geez, I mean, you know, I mean, because then you look at, again, I mean, in the last segment we just talked about young players and how they're not as good as, but I mean, look what Anaheim's got coming up, like on defense.
I mean, wow. And look at, and even like Trevor Zegras needs to be obviously a top six forward to be effective. He's not a two way guy.
No.
But you've got Mason McTavish, you've got Leo Carlson. You've got Cutter Gauthier coming up the pipeline, and the way he's played for Boston College as a sophomore really makes me think that he's going to be there sooner than later.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you get another high pick, I mean, they could win the lottery again. You could get Max Celebrini, another center.
Right.
And you've got great D, you know, even though Drysdale was traded, you got Minchikov. You've got Olin Zellweger. You've got Jackson Lacombe. Like, you've got options.
Tristan Luno. Like, you're just... Yeah, I mean, yeah,
guys.
So I wouldn't be that reticent to make that trade. And I wonder if, you know, like, you go to Jersey and say, hey, you know, he's like Jack Hughes' best friend, hey?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they would, maybe
what
there
you
would
got
be some.
Us.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
What do you have? Yeah.
Interesting. Well, let's stick with Anaheim. John Gibson, the veteran goaltender. You know, again, it feels like Gibson likes being in Anaheim. He doesn't have the same prominent role he once did. He used to be their bulletproof guy. But should he stay or should he go? If any team is interested at the deadline.
Well, he seems to like staying there unless you believe the rumor mill, because apparently he said he wanted out. 30-year-old goalie with a couple of years left on his deal, I would say go.
Mm.
Like at this point, like because by the time Anaheim's
ready to
do anything, like ready to seriously contend,
it's going to be Dostal.
Yeah, I mean, and Gibson's going to be on the downside of, you know, of 30.
Yeah.
I think people really, like sometimes turnarounds happen quickly.
Sure.
But I think people really, really underestimate how long a rebuild takes.
It's a great point.
It takes way longer than people think. Ken Holland once told me, he said, a rebuild from like when you cut it, when you take it right down to the wood.
Yep.
A rebuild is 5 to 10 years.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a real rebuild. A good, solid, well done, executed rebuild is 5 to 10 years. It's not 2 years, it's not 3 years, it's 5 to 10.
Yeah.
It takes longer than people think.
Dean Lombardi, when he was with Los Angeles, told me the exact same thing. He was like, it takes like 8 years.
Yeah.
It's like it didn't start with the Drew Doughty pick. That was like part of it.
Yeah,
but
that
it's
was
like,
kind of in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Let's stick on goaltenders. Jacob Markstrom, all of a sudden, playing lights out in Calgary. But the Flames, we know they got a lot of guys that are going to move out. So Jacob Markstrom. Oh, by the way, I think John Gibson should stay if he likes it there.
Yeah.
If he's accepting that role, then it's like, why not? You live in the OC. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Yeah, if he's fine being there.
Worst places, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. But Jacob Markstrom, if you're Calgary, all of a sudden, you could probably get a mint for that goaltender.
You could. And you've already dealt Lindholm for a pretty good package. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, and I don't know. Like, goalies... You know, we talked about Fleury, everything. I just feel like everybody is guessing on goalies now.
Right.
So you just try and get a guy when he's in a really good couple of years in his career. Like, it all started with Devan Dubnyk. Mm. Like, he was sitting on top of the scrap heap.
Right.
Which is apparently, there actually is a scrap heap. It's behind a Saint-Hubert in Longueuil, Quebec. But he was just there, and then he comes back, and he's like one of the best goalies in the league.
Yeah.
You know, so,
who knows?
Yeah.
Connor Ingram? Sure, why not?
Yeah.
Aiden Hill Stanley Cup winner? Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Unless it's like Thatcher Demko or like Connor Hellebuck, you're sort of like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to a defenseman then. Sean Walker of the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, this is an interesting one because the Flyers have been playing much better than we expected this year.
Yep.
But if you look at what they're building, Sean Walker is a little bit older than the core they're putting together.
Yep.
And when they get Jamie Drysdale, it all of a sudden, it doesn't make Sean Walker redundant by any stretch of the imagination, but it does make the Flyers pause and say, well, if we can get a first rounder and maybe even something else, why not? So it feels like Sean Walker is going to get moved, but should he get moved?
I say no.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. And I think the Philadelphia Flyers should just say, we're not trading Sean Walker. We know we're probably going to lose him for nothing after this year, and we're fully prepared to do that.
Mm.
Because I think where the Flyers are right now and the way they're playing right now and the opportunity they have in front of them right now, I really think that the Owen Tippetts and the Morgan Frosts and the Travis Konechnys and they are going to benefit from playing meaningful games down the stretch and possibly playing in a playoff series.
Yeah.
Even if they lose in the first round, even if they get smoked in the first round,
you
know, you talk about what you're building and you talk about what you're trying to do. Well, like, when you do that and your young players go through that, well, that's another development phase that they've gone through in their career.
Yeah.
And I think that helps you as an organization. I think it pushes you ahead as an organization.
Mm.
And I think it moves things forward.
Yeah.
I'm not here to say that Philly should stop the rebuild and should, you know, but what I'm saying is look at where you are and look at the benefits that you have. And to me, if I'm Danny Briere, maybe it's just like, yeah, we're going to lose him. Yeah, we'll keep them, and we'll keep them for this playoff run, and our young guys will be all the better for it a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to agree with you on this one because apparently he's a great guy in the room as well. So I do think that getting to the playoffs, which Sean Walker will help you do, is more important than losing him for nothing in the summer.
Yep.
Also, and again, you look at the Flyers and that rebuild, and they've still got Maciej Michkov in the pipeline. They love Oliver Bonk, who is a defenseman.
Denver Barkey is—he's another guy too. Like,
you
know, Oliver Bonk scored his 20th goal last night.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah. And I know they're very high on him. He's already played in one World Juniors for Canada, so bright future for him.
Mm-hmm.
Ken, it is time for rapid fire. It's been a while.
It's been a while, and I'm ready.
Let's do it, Connor. Hit us with some questions.
We're doing really rapid because we're doing predictions.
All right.
Tomorrow is Game 7 of the Rivalry Series at 2 o'clock. Who takes it? It's currently tied 3-3.
I'm going to go Canada. Marie-Philippe Poulin, You can't beat her in a clutch game, and Canada's got the momentum. They've won the past three games of this series.
Yeah, you can't beat her in a clutch game. Hey, maybe you might want to talk to the U.S. about that. I know they've been three straight. I'm going to pick USA because of home ice advantage.
Fair enough.
Beauty. Battle of Ontario tonight. It's not what it used to be, but it's still pretty good. Which team starts a winning streak? And do Ottawa go to overtime for the third straight game?
You know what? It feels like the Leafs go to overtime a lot against opponents below them in the standings. So I'll take that prop bet. I think it's going to be Toronto because I think they do need to keep in gear heading towards a solid playoff spot.
I don't bet. I'm not a betting guy. But if I were a betting guy, I would, like, stay away from the Toronto Maple Leafs like the plague.
Fair.
Because you never know what you're getting. They're the Tom Hanks box of chocolates. Right. So who's going to win? I have no idea. The Leafs might win 10-1. They might lose 4-3. Right. They might lose 5-1. I don't know. You never know with this team.
It's true. Yeah.
All right. The Scuttling Kings face the Edmonton Oilers in a rematch of last year's playoffs. Who takes it?
I'm going to go Edmonton because I bet they're still mad about Vegas breaking their streak and Los Angeles is going to suffer the consequences.
Well, I'm
going to
go Edmonton too. I mean, you're expecting that new coach bounce, which may happen, but I just think Edmonton's just...
Not against Edmonton.
They're a juggernaut right now. They are on some kind of roll.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Tomorrow, there's an Usher concert with some football around it.
Right.
I know we're a hockey show, but... San Francisco 49ers taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Who wins that game?
You know what? I moderately follow the NFL, and I feel like at this point, I'm not going to bet against Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce in a playoff game. They just do it every time, or pretty much every time. I don't know much about San Francisco as a team, but I just feel like Mahomes and Kelce get it done.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I just feel like I pick them to lose every week, and they just keep winning.
Right.
And you know, it's very difficult to bet against Patrick Mahomes. Although Brock Purdy, you know, he's another guy that's like he's been totally maligned this year, and he's been very, very good too. But I don't know. I just got to think that the guys who have been there before, been there and done that,
right,
might be able to be there and do that again.
Fair enough.
We'll see. Final prediction, Usher. What song does he perform?
Ken, I'll go to you first.
Oh, I'd have to know an Usher song in order to say which one he's going to sing first. I thought he did Turn Down for What?
Yeah.
But it turns out he didn't do that. There will be a lot of people showing people to their seats in the forms of Ushers at that stadium.
There you go.
That's all I got.
I'm going to go with Yeah. I think that's going to be the opener. That's the end for us, thanks to BetMGM and NorthlandHockey.com. It's been the Hockey News Pregame Show. See you later.